It's quite a misty morning this morning. The walking away through the woods, the mist hanging through the trees. It's quite evocative. And one of the things that works for me is a series that we watched on Netflix in the middle of, talking of Dharma, in the middle of the first lockdown in the COVID lockdown in New Zealand. It was March 2020, and we thought, right, let's settle in and watch Buddha. It was a 52-part series, I think, on the life of the Buddha. So that got us through the first lockdown. One of the things, it was an interesting production. I'm not necessarily making a recommendation, but we did love it in its own way. But one of the things about it that really touched me in a deep way that I really loved was the evocation of the time and place of the Buddha. Of course, the series was based in India. And, you know, the stories in the suttas of a moonlit night, they're in the forest, it's a moonlit night, in a clearing, and then there in this series, Buddha, occasionally they'd be outside of the palace, and it'd be a moonlit night. And it wasn't the clutter of cities or villages. It was this beautiful, kind of sometimes misty sense that you see today in India as well. The forest, the landscape is more prominent. And there's something about the context that gave rise to these teachings that's evoked for me. I also spent some time growing up in Southeast Asia, playing outside on those moonlit nights, and it's a bodily felt sense that you get of being connected to the world in a deeper way, not just tucked away inside your house. So thinking about the context in which these teachings have been given. As we know, the Buddha taught out of compassion, for the manifold. And that compassion is still reaching us today and will reach others long after we're gone. It's a force that moves through time and space, that compassion. And the teachings, I'm thinking about the qualities, the Brahma-viha that Carol explored for us last night, or with us last night. Coming out of that context where the Buddha and those moved by his teachings, are gathering in those very settings, not so very different from what we see outside our window here. Forest, greens predominant, maybe a light mist. And people have been practicing together, and they're in a more collectivist culture. So these qualities of interbeing, of being with and for each other in the practice, all of that is implicit in these teachings. Didn't need to be made explicit quite in the same ways as we need to now. I certainly felt that I started to meditate with books, as a lot of us do, in my 20s. And then when I went to a practice center, the Buddhist Society of Victoria, if anyone is interested, but where there was a resident bhikkhu for some time, and then also bhikkhunis and Sila Dharma came coming through and giving teachings. There was a whole context around it of dana. That was really prominent for me, showing up. There were a lot of older Sri Lankan practitioners who really brought me up in the dana, actually. How they would come and make sure the place was clean and shining. That there were flowers for the shrine, offering the meal. They were so non-judgmental. I was in my 20s, a bit of a klutz in that space, getting things wrong, and they were just so happy to see younger people involved in the Dharma. They were so loving. And that formed an association for me with Buddhist practice, this loving quality and this community quality that subtends the whole thing. It's the strata and the substance of the whole practice. And here we are together, similarly in a space that's organized by and structured around metta, around karuna, around loving kindness and compassion. The forest has a softness about it. There's room for the cougar and the bear and the, I don't think they're here right now, but it's a place of inclusivity. Yeah, it's run by volunteers or supported significantly by volunteers. People here going above and beyond the call of their duty to make this place work so that people like us have an opportunity to practice and deepen. It's like anything, the very ground we walk on can't be seen, right, after you're covering it. We can miss what's right there under our noses, can't we? The love that's holding this place together, and the kindness that we're all bringing into this space, giving one another this opportunity to practice by our own behaviours and our own aspirations and commitment. This is nourishment to drink in, especially in these mornings where the mind might be hammering away at us again. Gosh, we've been here for a few days and the mind's still saying this, still saying that. Maybe some are in the realm of the unconditioned, but I'd say there's still a lot of mind activity going on that might feel a bit tormenting, a bit painful. Maybe there's loneliness, worry, all sorts of memories, heavinesses that have been dumped on us in this life. All sorts of conditions that we're working with. And here we are looking for the peace that comes in letting go. And bringing to heart these qualities that absolutely support the path and that are the path. These Brahma Vihara, the abode of the Brahmas, the heavenly abidings, sublime abidings. There are different translations for it, but we get the picture. In the sense of the sublime, an abiding, a home, a place to be that is composed of loveliness. And we're not talking about psychological loveliness here. We're not talking about the furniture, we're talking about the space in our being. It's an energetic quality, isn't it? The metta, karuna, the loving kindness and compassion that are absolutely there as natural qualities of the heart that we can continue to call for. We bring them forth with breath and intention. Some people like to call them forth. May I be well, peaceful and happy. Others, be well, peaceful and happy. There are different ways. It's like kindling a fire. And once it gets going, it has a momentum of its own. These qualities are given the epithets in the chanting. Unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, exalted. These states, they're not just loose words, they're actual descriptions of the capacities of the heart. And as we cultivate the Brahma Vihara, they're a ground, as I'm saying, as we've been saying, a ground for the practice. And they're also deeply protective of ourselves and others. And the heart has substance, texture that can be transmitted. And we've all had those experiences. We've held someone at heart, sent them love and best wishes, and then the phone rings. And they're checking in. Oh, I was thinking of you, and they ring up. There are many, many examples where we've practiced in a particular way, and it's felt, it's received. But we can't give from an empty cup. So we fill our own being in this way, permeate the being, and it spreads out just like a flower gives its fragrance. It's freely given. And it is an infinite resource. So as we settle in from all the precious, we can make the adjustments we need to feel comfortable enough to sustain the period of sitting. And then what's there? What really helps us to be present, focused? If it doesn't feel so good in there, then we tend to go off to our usual mental resorts. Or to vague out, dissociate. But instead, we create the conditions of loneliness for the practice. We check in, how's the body doing? Any areas that are a little bit stuck or contracted, and we allow the breath like a beautiful mist to wash through those areas. The quality of care, we bring this quality of care to the practice. And do you get it? Do you get that hum, that loveliness just starts to arise naturally? And we're not stirring up trouble. Just allowing this moment, allowing what's here to be met, to be received without judgment. Can my resistance to practice this morning be received with love and acceptance, for example? Can my tiredness be just held there with a quality of loving acceptance? Just a small gesture in this direction, and you notice that maybe the face starts to relax, maybe the calves stop clenching. The body's so ready to relax when given an opportunity, and the mind too. And it's not done through force. I remember in my 20s reading Jack Kornfield talking about the puppy. So you're training a puppy. Say sit, and the puppy sits for a nanosecond and then gets all excited and leaps off somewhere. You pat it gently, lovingly, sit. And the puppy looks at you with big eyes, sits for a second, then runs off. You pick it up gently, pat it lovingly, sit, because you are training this little puppy. The puppy has its own wild energy. And so with our minds, that sense of, can we just be here? Oops, no, it looks like we can't, we're running off into worry. No, okay, it's coming back lovingly. Nothing going wrong. And then this next moment, can we be here? Can we be here with this discomfort, this whatever is coming up? Yes, for a fraction of a second. Oh, now we're going again. So on it goes. It doesn't matter if we've been practicing for 10 minutes, 10 weeks, 10 years, 30, 40 years. There's still this effort to be with whatever's arising, with loving kindness, compassion. then we know that what's happening in here, some version of that is likely to be happening in people around us as well. We can have a loving heart and compassion for ourselves, for others, for both. Invoking the lineage that is ours, those bhikkhunis, those bhikkhus, sitting with the Buddha in a beautiful forest, clear air, perhaps on a full moon night. They've all been living in some kind of communal relationship. They've gathered for some teachings. They settle into ease, peace, and loving qualities of the heart, supported by one another. And we take our place in that lineage. We pick up the practice, keeping it alive for ourselves and others. Through the powerful, exalted qualities of the heart. Through loving kindness, through compassion. And the joy that starts to arise with the gathered heart and mind. The equanimity, the evenness of mind that allows phenomena to arise and pass without reactivity. The deep, quiet power of the sage. We're cultivating moment to moment. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.